You really want to be really clear before going into any surgical procedure with clients, emotionally and psychologically, is you want to set their expectations. So you want to tell them, okay, this is what we're expecting from this surgery. We're either expecting curative, a palliative outcome. But you really want to know, is this going to be a preventative solution? You're wanting to know what exactly the end outcome is, so no one is disappointed at the end.
Welcome to the Positive Pet Podcast. This podcast is where pet heroes and expert advice come to life. I'm Aaron Nauta, your host, a passionate animal activist, first aid trainer, and safety coach. This podcast was created for pet owners like you, where each week we'll share heartwarming stories and essential tips to keep your pets happy, healthy, and safe. Let's embark on this positive adventure together. Hello and welcome to the Positive Pet Podcast. Today we are joined by Dr. Chanel Samo, a veterinarian that studied at the University of Melbourne in 2020 and has been a part of the Greenvale team since 2019. She has a special interest in surgery and works with smaller animals. Tune in today for practical advice that every pet owner should know. Let's get started.
When I graduated, I didn't do any extra training. I just went straight into practice.
Yeah.
I was working at a clinic at the time who kindly took me on after I graduated vet, which was really nice. So I got to know the client base and all the pets really well and all my colleagues really well before I started working. And so I went straight into it. Initially, when I left uni, I thought I'd be really into like medicine. So that's diagnosing with diabetes and like working up those kind of illnesses. But then once I started doing surgery, I was like, this is for me.
This is what I prefer. Yeah.
Exactly. I loved it. Yeah. I went down that pathway of just having a special interest in surgery. So whenever cool or crazy things came in, my boss would get me in there to help him. And with that, I became a little bit more, I guess, interested in orthopedics.
Yeah.
So doing knee reconstruction, fracture repairs, that kind of stuff.
And so what inspired you to get into veterinarian?
That's a really good question. Honestly, I don't remember what it was. As long as I remember, I wanted to do it. My aim from being in high school was wanting to be a vet.
Like, helping animals.
Anything else.
Yeah.
I remember as young adult, I had a lot of close family members that had lots of dogs and were very passionate about having pets, and you know, pets are a part of their family. And that's become a lot more prevalent in the recent years. Back in the early 2000s, that like wasn't super commonplace. So having all the dogs and Labradors and dogs running around me all day was really, I think, the foundation which I built the passion.
And currently, just so that we can let everybody know, what do you have at the moment? Which animals do you have?
I've got a little Shih Tzu. Her name is Pimple.
Aww, she's beautiful.
Yeah, she's my little buddy. Always get home, always there when I leave. But wait, yeah, at the door. So she's my little buddy.
That's beautiful. Yeah, we just had a Pippa and she was 11 and a half and she just passed about a month ago. And so Pippa's in a Shih Tzu. And it was like,
really?
Yeah. So I'm like, that's a special place in my heart for a Pippa that's a Shih Tzu. Yeah.
So good.
So what are some of the most common surgical emergencies that you encounter at the practice currently?
Good question. So we get a pretty wide array of things being at a GP because we're that first point of call for most clients.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the most common surgical emergencies that we get, there's a few. The first one being something called a pyometra. Pyometra is essentially an infection in a female entire uterus, usually in dogs, but it can happen in cats, and it is a surgical emergency. So these dogs come in pretty much flat, recumbent, able to get up, vomiting, high temperature, really sick, and the aim is to get that infected uterus out as soon as you can.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially come in with a uterus full of pus, which is really gross, but one of the main ones that we see. Second, we get blockages, urinary blockages in cats. Again, that's another major emergency, surgical emergency. The reason they get a blockage is that they get a mucus plug or something stuck in their urethra between their bladder and the outside world, and therefore they can't urinate. And when they can't urinate, the urine builds up and the toxins build up and it can slow their heart and be fatal. So we try and get them in as soon as we can mm-hmm. and unblock their urethra so they can pass urine freely. Yeah. Another one, splenectomy. So it's a spleen removal in dogs.
Yeah.
Usually older dogs get yeah. this issue where they get a lump or of some description on their spleen. And it will have like low-grade bleeding, but then sometimes it can rupture. And again, they start bleeding out essentially internally.
Yeah.
Again, major emergency. We have to get them in, stabilize them. If they need a blood transfusion, do that and get that spleen out as soon as we can. We can safely remove the spleen without any, consequences to the dog after, but it definitely helps them a lot when they're bleeding from that lump.
We won't go too deep into those specific ones today because we're going to focus more on triaging and stuff like that. But can you share a memorable story about maybe a dog that you've treated that once they've gotten there, what happened and what kind of was impactful of that?
Actually, leading on to that last splenectomy
yeah.
example, I had my very first splenectomy on this dog. His name was Vito.
Yeah.
This adorable bulldog. And he presented because he was just a little bit flat, like just a little bit not quite right.
Mm-hmm.
And the physical exam was a little bit pale. He was still okay though. So we did blood tests and found that, okay, maybe his blood count was a little low. Nothing too worrisome, but a little bit low. And I thought, well, maybe we should go to an ultrasound after this just to make sure there's nothing funky happening in his abdomen. Lo and behold, he had a big old splenic mass in his abdomen that was bleeding. We went to surgery, took his spleen out, sent it off to be tested, all that kind of thing. Vito recovered, did so well. With the mass, unfortunately, came back as something nasty, which can happen.
Yeah.
So Vito's been doing so well. Like that was 2 years ago. And usually with these nasty types of lumps, their median survival time is less than 12 months. So yeah. The fact that that was 2 years ago, he's like doing amazing. And I think he's just about all odds. And that surgery stays with me like that. Patient.
How old was he?
He was about 7 or 8.
Yeah, yeah. So still quite young.
Still quite young. Yeah, yeah, exactly. So the fact that he's doing so well and thriving. Yeah.
And you were able to catch it probably if you hadn't actually looked and did that extra test to find out, then you wouldn't have known. And
and then take out his spleen and he was stable the whole surgery and he
awesome.
Thriving.
Yeah. Beautiful. How do you prepare a pet and its owner for surgery? And yeah, it's going to be emotionally traumatizing on probably both of them. Yeah, so how do you get them ready?
I guess there's two parts to that question, the emotional and practical preparation of the mm-hmm. runner, and then the practical preparation of the pet. You can't really emotionally prepare them if mm-hmm. you didn't treat some pets beforehand.
Yeah.
So I guess where you really want to be really clear before going into any surgical procedure with clients mm-hmm. emotionally and psychologically is you want to set their expectations. So you want to tell them, okay, this is what we're expecting from this surgery. We're either expecting curative, a palliative outcome, mm-hmm. but you really want to know, is this going to be a preventative solution? You're wanting to know what exactly the end outcome is so no one is disappointed at the end.
Mm-hmm.
You also want to go through all the risks associated with the procedure. If it's a really elderly patient or a heart disease patient or a patient that lost a lot of blood and needs a transfusion,
mm-hmm.
you want to go through all of these risks with the client before going through the surgery, because if the worst was to happen, you want to know that the client was on board and knew that could potentially be a negative outcome.
Mm-hmm.
I guess practical preparation of an owner is also setting the expectation of cost towards the end. Certain surgeries, usually there'll be a bit of a range in terms of how much it's going to cost. Other things, they need to stay in hospital for a long period of time. So you want to set that, again, expectation that this is going to be a pretty long process and costly process, and that's something that you're prepared to undergo.
Mm-hmm.
As well as if it's like an orthopedic procedure, you want to make sure that practically the owner has like a little crate or a little plate pan or something to keep the dog or cat contained in after mm-hmm. the surgery. They're not running around and putting pressure on their sore legs or legs that just got repaired. But it's all about post-op preparation as well. In terms of preparing the patient, there's a lot of sort of testing that we do before we go through with any surgery, whether it's x-rays, blood tests, ultrasound, to make sure we know exactly what we're doing before mm-hmm. we go in. We don't ever really want to go in blind. And if we do, we're telling the owner, okay, well, we're doing an exploratory procedure. We want to find out what's wrong because all of our testing has really taught us exactly what we need to know.
Mm-hmm.
So again, you want to set that benchmark that this is what we're trying to do. And with the patient, you want to know prior that you're going in and you're trying to find exactly what we're trying to find and you know where it is. So I guess preparing them could include like medication, blood tests on the day, that kind of stuff, just to make sure the patient's okay to undergo any procedure. There's a lot of preparation.
No, definitely. And I would assume that it also, for yourself, having to actually have those conversations would not be easy sometimes with some of the pet owners.
It's like that. Vet school's 6 to 7 years, but they never really 100% teach you how to communicate stuff about finances, stuff about welfare, stuff about quality of life, like all that kind of thing you have to learn on the job.
And that
is really hard. Like, it's not easy, but you definitely get the hang of it. And you get, you know, whenever I'm, I guess, offering options to a client or a pet owner, I'm giving them gold standard, silver standard, bronze standard. So I'm giving them three options. More options, each with different costs, each with different outcomes. So it's
like, and they probably also have a, like, I know that when we were going in with Pippa, we already had our thoughts of this is where we're going, right? This is our limit of how much we're willing to cut, because it's quality of life. You've got to weigh up all those 100%. Kind of those options. Yeah. And they probably already have a lot of that when they're coming in, they've maybe planned, but some people haven't, I'm sure as well. And you're giving them that first.
Exactly. Yeah. And it can be pretty scary as a pet owner if you don't know what's happening. You've been presented with all of these options and you get confused. You're not sure what to do. We try and explain what we're doing, why we're doing it as best we can before doing anything.
Yeah.
So that we really have people on board, because there's no point in doing something if everyone's not on board with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. Thank you. So moving on to tips for pet owners themselves. So what are your tips that you have for triaging your pet before they get to the hospital? Yeah.
I guess I have four helpful tips, which I know they can be easy to say now, but they can be difficult to do in midst of an emergency. Mm-hmm. Number one is to remain calm. I know it's hard to do, especially if it's a snake bite, hit by a car situation. Like, they're very stressful, a high adrenaline situation. Mm-hmm. But what you want to do is remain calm, and you don't want to put yourself in danger, because that's not helpful to anyone else either. Yeah. Remain calm, assess your immediate dangers. If there is a snake, don't try and grab it. Don't try and kill it to bring it in. Take a photo if you have to. If you're in the middle of a freeway or there's cars around, try and assess the situation. Remain calm. Don't get hurt yourself. And another big one is, if you are coming down to the clinic, don't speed, because again, we don't want you to be in danger. Mm-hmm. You get in trouble just because you're trying to make your way down as soon as you can.
Yeah.
So it's remain calm and be rational as much as you can.
Yeah.
So that's number one. And also another thing that people don't take into consideration is, when their pet is in pain or has been hit by a car or something bad has happened, they probably will not hesitate to bite you. And people really get upset at that. And it's end of the day, like, they're painful. If you touch their fracture, they're going to react. And whether or not they meant it, that's fine. But again, you want to try and, if you're going to pick your pet up, try and do it as carefully as you can. Or even just put a towel or a blanket around them and scoop them up and transport them to your car safely and securely if you can. So that's number one.
Yeah.
Number two is, you want to try and check some vital signs. So the main thing we check when a pet initially comes in as a triage from some form of emergency is, we're going to check if they're responsive.
Mm-hmm.
A main way you can do this is check if they're breathing. So check their respiratory rate. You can place your hand over their heart so you can cup their chest and see if they've got a heartbeat. Now you'll see that you can do that right behind their arms. So where their arms are, you want to go just behind that and cup their chest. You can also check for a blink reflex. So you just tap the corners of their eyes and see if they're blinking. So that's checking for sort of that responsive major vitals. You also want to check their gum color. So you want to flip their lip, check the gum color, check if it's pink, white, blue, purple, blotted,
bruised,
whatever you're checking for. These are things to take into consideration. And also, like, with gum colors, like, the tongue color as well can change also. So those are the main sort of vitals that we want owners to assess if they are coming in. So, look, my dog's blue in color, we're going to come down straight away. Or he's not responsive, he's not breathing, he's not blinking, I can't feel his heartbeat, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Are the main things that owners can check at the time of any form of emergency. Number three is trying to control your situation. So trying to control the situation is very situation dependent. So if you have a dog that has a fracture, a fractured leg, you want to try and immobilize your pet. You want to try and stop them from walking around or trying to run around on that fractured leg. Very similar with a bite. You want to try and immobilize your pet as quickly as possible because that's how the toxins spread around the body.
Yes.
So you want to try and stop them from moving and control that situation. Any major bleeds, you want to try and put really firm pressure on that bleed. And if you can, try and tourniquet over the top of it, but it can be really hard to know how far you have to go. So usually I say just digital pressure, like hand pressure, is good at stopping major bleed because you can gauge how hard to press.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be hard if your bleed is on top of a fracture because that would be really
painful.
Tricky. You don't want to put pressure on that fracture. And that's another thing. You don't want to try and bandage over a fractured leg. So you just want to immobilize them.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing, trying to control the situation in the case of a heat stroke patient, which is usually when people are out for walks, the dogs will collapse and start breathing really labored, is you want to try and cool them down as quickly as you can. So bands and spraying water on them. We try not to dunk them in water because a lot of the patients that come in with heat stroke also have signs of drowning. We want to avoid that situation with that secondary aspiration.
Mm-hmm.
So spraying water or just like even like with the hose on their body, but not actually physically dunking their head into water. And again, other things, so like identifying toxins, if you're worried about a toxicity, try to identify a snake, take a photo of it, don't bring it in or kill it.
You don't want the snake brought in?
It's cloned, but we treat
all animals, right?
We treat all animals, exactly. So
no, do not catch the snake.
Do not catch the snake.
Yeah.
See if you take a photo or even just try and remember the color.
Yeah.
That helps us. But generally speaking, a lot of our antivenins cater for a lot of the toxic snakes we find in Victoria and if you're around Australia.
And so you guys have that on in the clinic?
Pretty much every clinic would have an antivenin on board. Yeah. So I say most, but generally if you're going to call up or if you're going to go traveling, make sure you go in for your yearly checkup with your vet. You ask them, cool, now I'm going traveling. What do I need to keep in mind for when I'm there?
Perfect.
For tick paralysis prevention, like trying to avoid being bitten by a snake, stuff like that.
So far we've got remain calm.
Remain calm.
We've got check the vital signs. We've got control your situation.
Control the situation. And lastly is see immediate vet care. Even if your pet seems initially fine, a lot of toxins, a lot of specific types of like snail bait or rat bait can take a little while before they kick in. So especially like with rat bait, for example, it could take 48 hours before you notice any type of bleeding or bruising or clinical signs that they have a clotting itch.
Yeah.
So you want to make sure, even if you're not sure what's happened, you just want to seek immediate vet care and get that testing done before it's too late. So yeah, that's the main thing. Call your GP or your closest emergency and just chat to them and be like, look, I'm really worried. Snake in the area. He's been limping. He did a vomit. I'm not sure. They'll just tell you to bring him in straight away and they'll check all of his vital signs, all your pet's vital signs, and bloods and clotting times and all that kind of thing.
Great. Yeah. So just one more time. We've got remain calm.
Check the vital signs, control the situation, and seek immediate care.
Perfect. Awesome. Four tips by Chanel. So can you outline the steps for bandaging a dog's leg before seeking medical attention? So this would be, you said don't do it if it's a fracture. Yes. So you're saying this is generally if there's a bleed.
Correct.
So there's an abrasion, there's a bleed,
100%.
Then you're going to be wrapping.
Yeah. So you want to try and differentiate the situations that you do and you do not want to bandage that leg. So pretty much the only time where you do is if there's like a laceration or a bleed. So times that you don't is like a hit by a car where you're not sure about a fracture or a dislocation. If there is a bleed in that situation, gentle pressure to try and stop it is great. But you don't want to bandage over the top of that, especially if you're worried that there might be a break because it's very painful and can actually dislodge your break more.
Okay.
And can make it difficult to put together.
Yeah.
So when you do want to bandage it is essentially when you've got just the laceration and you can see that, or you've seen it happen. Your dog ran past the fence and just nicked himself. And now he's bleeding. You want to try and bandage that one and put some pressure on it before you take him to bed. So I guess the best way to try and do it is, again, that digital pressure. So holding pressure with your hand and can paper towel, whatever you want to do, t-shirt, put it on there. and try and hold it on for 2 to 5 minutes. That can be really hard to do, especially if your dog's trying to run around or cat's trying to run around. But you want to, again, try and control the situation if you can. Take them inside, take them somewhere where they can settle and just try and hold pressure to that area. If they're running around, again, their blood pressure is going to be high and they're going to bleed.
Bleed more, yeah.
So you want to try and assess everything, calm down the situation and hold some pressure to that area. Now, I guess a lot of things that we see sometimes is if pet parents trying their best to bandage things up and they bandage things a bit too tight. So we want to try and avoid the too soft, too tight predicament that most people find themselves in.
Now, I know in humans, it's 2 fingers in the side to see if it's too tight. Would
Pretty much, okay. Yeah, that's really good. Very similar. And I guess if you're in the middle of nowhere and you're not sure what to use, grab your sock, tie it around. You can't really tighten a sock too tight, but it will hold a bit of pressure or a bit of t-shirt or something just to tie. Stuff like tapes can be good, but they can sometimes be, again, too tight, especially if they're stuck on. You won't really gauge whether or not that.
So let's say you had a little first aid kit. Would you just say would you clean it first? Would you want to clean it out if it did stop bleeding?
It's definitely hard to do usually with a pet that's a bit frantic or stressed. And they'll usually react no matter what. So I usually find you put your
just
hand
put
on it.
Pressure.
They really try and fight you on that as much as if you're trying to clean it or wipe it or touch it.
Yeah.
But you could definitely try if you do have antiseptic. You just have to make sure with your antiseptics that there's no alcohol-based ones.
No.
Dettol, for example, you want to go for like your iodine-based ones or your chlorhexidine-based that aren't going to burn the wound or hurt the dog, essentially. Yeah.
And just a piece of gauze on the to put a pad on and then crepe bandage is fine.
We can wrap it with the stretchy. Usually you can get first aid kits from a pet store if you're thinking. Yeah. You go traveling a lot or you go up to the country and you take your dog with you. You can have one of those in your car. So if you did need it, you can definitely use it. But yeah, stuff like commonplace stuff like socks or t-shirts or part of your pants, if you just tighten a bit of gauze onto that. And then again, trying to seek immediate care to make sure, is this over a major vein, arterial? Is this something that we need to stitch up ASAP or is this something that potentially could heal on its own? That's up to the discretion of the vet that sees it.
Yeah.
It's hard to know. There's no hard and fast rules about whether or not it needs stitch up and that kind of thing until you actually see what structures are involved.
Great. What common mistakes do pet owners make during an emergency and how can they avoid them?
Panicking. Panicking a lot and speeding. So we want to try and avoid that having a crash on the way or that kind of thing. And panicking, even though the adrenaline kicks in and you're stressed and you're trying to do what's best, it can cloud your judgment. So if you're not sure, just call someone that can help you or your local vet clinic. If they're not available, call your local emergency, which will have 24-hour people to monitor the phone. There's also, like, if it's out of set GP hours, you can get into contact with, like, chat, for example, that have people, again, vets on there all the time to respond to your messages. Don't panic and try and see if someone can help you in that situation. Number two is call the clinic prior to your arrival. So if you're like, oh, I need to go right now because my dog has broken their leg and I need to go right now, call us before you come so we actually are anticipating your arrival. Because if you just rock up, which is still fine, but if you just rock up, it's going to take us 5-10 minutes to get the x-ray stuff ready, the sedation stuff ready to get a vet available to help you. So it's nice, even if it's 2-3 minutes for us to get everyone together to actually anticipate the arrival of an emergency.
If your pet could have any superpower, what would it be and why?
Me and everyone else on the planet would say to live forever.
Yes.
Like forever and ever.
Yeah. But then they'd outlive us and then they'd want to.
Yeah, I know. To live with us forever. Either that or to speak. I think as a vet, I would love if every pet or if I was just able to translate what they were saying.
Yeah.
Perfect. That would be, my job would be made so much easier.
100%.
Yeah. Either to speak or to live forever.
All right.
Say those two. I think flying, I can't control them. So
No. They would be out of here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, there's a ball. Thank you very much for being on Positive Pet Podcast today. Really, enjoyed those insights and look forward to hearing your journey and where that takes you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
And for those of you listening from home, please don't forget to like, subscribe, and share with a friend. See you next week.